What a story, that gospel we just heard. And I know there are a few preachers in the house this morning, and many of you have been to Sunday school long time ago, so it's a known story, and it's a story that speaks so strongly. I'm not going to preach on it per se, but it's my springboard. Start with the question, how did Jesus do that? Or why could he do that? Why could he sleep in the boat, in the storm, when his disciples, as we would say on the street here, are freaking out? You know? How did he do that? I have one answer. He was deeply, deeply at peace within himself. He had the peace of heaven and his Father ruling in his heart. One of the best blessings I can bring to a congregation at the end of a service is the peace of Christ rule in your hearts. That tough speaking letter from James lets out a piece of wisdom and understanding that a lot of the reason why people clobber each other is because we're not at peace within ourselves. Our thoughts, our impulses, our conscience, our heart, at war. And if you look closely at people, you can often see it on the face. Inner conflict leads to outer conflict. Jesus in the boat was the exact inverse of that. He was at peace. How did he get there? How had this taken hold? You know, my childish imagination was, he's God, he can do anything, he knows everything, so it's all cool, no problem. But as an adult, no, we're not wired that way. Information is not the solution to everything. And this is where the Gospels I find so helpful. The Jesus story. He's baptized in the River Jordan. Some of us have been there, haven't we? Yep. And then he's tested. And he's tested in the wilderness. And the question is, okay, you're the Son of God. What sort of son are you going to be? Because every other son of God failed on the job. And in that testing and in that affirmation from the Father, you are my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased, he could live in the face of death. He could live in the face of death and be at peace. He understood waves, he understood winds, but he was at rest in his Father. He was at peace. He was carrying the shalom of heaven in that boat as the tempest swirled around him. And his disciples, God bless them, don't we recognize ourselves in them? They were making a risk assessment. Well, this is a 9.5 out of 10 storm on the lake. This is code red. We're in deep trouble. Panic! Jesus, why aren't you panicking? Okay. Now, I'm just using this as a springboard. You can talk about these things over lunch. You know, is that sort of risk assessment realistic? Or should we join the spirit of our age where safety and health have taken over and turned everything into a potential disaster waiting to happen? And you know what? You might die. It's your line, Eric. He preaches at me at the Duke on Thursday, so. That's right, thank you. So he's not there. He's resting in the peace. He's not going to get caught up in this. We could all drown. Shouldn't you join us in solidarity and panic? So the real question I want to ask, and as we talk about baptism a bit, is how do we get there? How do we get to that place where we can look at dragons and bears and all manner of threats and death itself and be at peace. And you will know that some of us can do that and others are getting there. Baptism is part of it. Baptism is part of it. I was greatly helped by Richard Rohr some years ago, a controversial man, but who helped me understand that baptism is a confrontation with death. And you'll see it shortly, because the parents of the candidate, without inquiring of the candidate, have asked for James to be truly dipped, baptized, under he goes. And it's baptism speaks to us of our death, of being covered by the waters, such that we are buried. That's the point of it. And that needs to happen somewhere. That needs to happen somewhere for that peace to find its place, so that we are not living in the life of the flesh, fearful of every risk and danger, but we are living in the life that God gives in Christ in the resurrection, in the foretaste of that. Now, because we have a few scholars here, I'm going to drop a name. James Dunn, the baptism conversion nexus. And what he's picking up there is something that Christians have squabbled about for a long time and are at different positions. You've got to be somewhere on the relationship between baptism and adult faith or conversion. And what Tim and Megan have chosen for James, is that baptism begins the journey. It doesn't end it. Because what needs to happen in his life, as is happening in all our lives, is that he needs to be aligned with Christ in his death and his resurrection. And the squabble is about, well, can he declare his own faith? Can he profess why he believes and why he wants to be baptized? And some say you must, and they call it believer's baptism, as if there's an unbeliever's baptism. And others rest more on the grace of God. If we start the journey well, we can then continue it. To start the journey well and continue it, you need to be raised in a Christian family, in a church. Ideally, in a Christian society too. But we can't count on that anymore. Christendom is over. It's finished. We are like the Jewish people have been for centuries. We are reduced to living in communities and families. And those families and communities are essential for this way of becoming aligned or growing into the peace of God in Christ, beginning at baptism. This was the emphasis of Luther and Calvin, resting in God's grace. Begin the journey well, and he will be faithful. And the family and the community support in every which way possible. So I'm just being clear about what's being chosen for here. And what we're going to look for in James through the decades are signs of that, what I call that alignment, where his baptism aligns with his behavior, with his being and his doing. Now, quite a few of us have one of these. If you live in New Zealand long enough and do some paperwork, you can get one of these. And then the journey starts. Okay, so you're a New Zealand citizen. What next? Now, the chatter around the globe in this process is, well, you have to integrate. And in local lingo, that means, well, become a Kiwi. right? How does that happen? How many generations does that take? How deep is that process? So the paperwork is relatively easy, but that process of, as it were, deep absorption, of really aligning with the country that you have come to make your own, of integrating into the culture, that takes time. And I suggest that what we're doing today for James is he's getting his passport in Christ. He is being admitted as a member of the church, but it ain't done. His time of testing in the wilderness will come. How? We can't anticipate, but it will, and it must. His time of confronting death in his, through his own eyes and his own experience must come as he appropriates and really takes to himself the life that is given to him in Christ, consequent on sharing in his death. So those are a few thoughts as in a few moments' time we have a baptism and what we're doing and what our faith and our hope is. Now, I'm pleased we're using, Megan has asked to use the liturgy of the Church of England, and I'm pleased because I've been using that for 18 years, so it's more than a little familiar. And there are several things this liturgy is really strong on, that I commend. One is it really takes seriously the role of the family, the congregation, the community. So we're going to begin with a lengthy conversation between, I'm facilitating this conversation at some point, between the parents and the godparents, you know, the immediate circle around James and those who are presenting him for baptism, as, I'm going to use this word again, the candidate, and you as family, friends, and congregation. And you have words to say that I hope you can own. If you can't own them, just duck that one. Don't say it. Don't just, you know, word bark for the sake of the occasion. Because before God, we are all being invited to be his family in Christ. That's one thing. The other thing that I really appreciate about liturgy are the thorough questions asked. There are six questions asked in relation to the commitment before baptism. And you'll see those when they come. If this were the early church, the very early church, last night James would have had an appointment with the diocesan exorcist. Why do I raise that? Mum's already frightened. Don't worry. But at the very end of a service, you will hear a charge when he is anointed with oil to fight valiantly against evil. He's not been set up for a Sunday school picnic. He's been set up for a lifelong contest. And I just raise these points because they are in the liturgy that we will be invited to participate in and to speak shortly. So, I just wonder, you know, I'm a one-time school teacher. Any questions? Okay, let's go, shall we? So I'd like to invite James, are you up for this? Your parents, the baptismal party, please. Would you come and stand here so that you can interface with the congregation?